Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of QSR Uncut. I'm your host, Danny Klein, the editorial director here at QSR Magazine, and joined by my colleague and co-host, Ben Coley. So before we get started, Ben, as this is actually his first podcast after his promotion, so he is now the QSR editor, so I have to make sure not to refer to myself that way in our podcast, but I think I will try, but a digital audio shout-out to Ben here from myself. By now, probably, since this will run well after I made the announcement, I'm sure a lot of you know. So anyway, we will not spend a lot of time talking about his greatness, but of course it was well-deserved. But anyhow, we'll get right into this week's episode. We have a repeat guest, which we do not do too often, but in the times that we have, it is always very exciting. And we are exploring what was actually one of my favorite podcasts. A lot of change since we first talked to MJ Riva. Arriva? I don't know. I pronounced it correctly. Arriva.
Riva. Right? You had it right.
Did I do that?
Yeah. You got it.
I'm just going to. Riva. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm just terrible at names, as everybody knows. But CEO of Pizza Factory. Awesome story. Franchisee as well. So really gets you from kind of the frontline perspective of what it's like to run a thriving organization, lots of growth, a lot of things to get into. But again, MJ, thank you for rejoining us months later here to give us kind of another look inside the business. So, yeah, we always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me and congratulations, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, so we'll just jump right into it, MJ, because I guess what we don't have to do this time is give a lot of background on how you started, although I think it is important for people to realize your operator focus. But, you know, let's just get started on kind of, if you want to provide a little bit of an update on the business, where you're all in that are at this point. You know, I think the pizza category is fascinating. You know, the industry as a whole right now is fascinating. You know, you have a lot of concepts who traffic-wise are pretty down, but they're doing a lot better on sales, so, you know, coming through price and what have you. But yeah, just kind of give us a little bit of a overview on how you all are doing, and we'll go from there.
Well, we're actually doing well. We, for the first quarter here, we're going to be opening, we just opened up a store in Riverside that started off gangbusters. It's one of our express models. There's about seating for about 15 people in this one, though they have a little bit of seating. And then we've got five more stores that are going to be opening within the next, well, within the first quarter. So we're really busy right now. So growth for us is positive and exciting, and we're definitely making some progress there. And the stores, the sales, you know, I just wish I could complain about something for the brand, but the labor issues seem to be subsiding a bit. So that's not even something that we're stressing about as much as we were. I'd say the biggest thing is the cost of food going up, but you're right, labor is increased and everybody's raised their prices, so is showing an increase in revenues, which, you know, you can take that any way you want. That it's bottom line, you got to look at how many customers are still coming in. So that's one of the reports that we always look at. It's not just the dollars, it's are you bringing in new people, and are those people that are coming in staying? So that's a big one. But the positive for us, at least, is we are really seeing an uptick back into our dining room sales, which is really good. It's exciting to see people coming back out again.
Yeah, I mean, talk a little bit about that labor. I mean, the last time we chatted, you were doing a lot of things, you know, for the recruitment perspective, taking care of employees who were coming. I mean, do you feel like a lot of that groundwork has started to pay off now? I mean, is the overall, I think I read today's report, you know, we're recording this in early February, you know, that, you know, actually the industry added a lot of jobs in there. It seems possible now that we'll get sort of near old numbers. I mean, we'll kind of see what happens, but, you know, how do you think you've sort of been proactive on that, you know, in making this happen?
Well, you know, I think the numbers that are put out into the media, sometimes everybody looks at each other and goes, how can that be? Because we're not getting any employees. So it was always felt a disconnect there with what they were reporting. But for our brand, what we found is it's more the way we reach out to try to find staff For example, tips are huge right now. People are tipping more than ever. So showing some way, including, because kids aren't really making, say, $15 an hour by the time they get their tips and everything. They're really like 20, 21. So our tips have just increased tremendously, which has been really interesting, which has, again, given us a way to promote to kids out there to come work for us, because it's really not $15 an hour. So that, and then just finding different avenues to reach out to these kids. We're a little bit more on TikTok, Facebook. We found some different avenues to try to reach out and get some more staff. So it's a combination of a lot of things. I don't think that, the age group that we usually attract is necessarily looking for health and retirement plans, which a lot of our stores offer. I don't think that was it. It really comes down to work environment. And when they see, not only is it the hourly, but also their tips, that's been a big one for us.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I read sometimes, you know, restaurants will layer in 401k plans and things like that. And I mean, it's really cool, you know, obviously you're on a corporate level, it makes a lot of sense. But sometimes I read those and I'm like, is this actually what somebody is asking for? I mean, you know, I think we as an industry sort of embrace the idea that, you know, you're going from one place to the next, or you're starting your career, or you're maybe even, you know, you might figure out after a couple of years you want to stay here. But I don't know that everyone enters, you know, the restaurant world with that in mind. And that's not really a negative. It's actually could be a positive if you're looking at how you recruit.
On the flip side of it, though, it's also way, you know, I mean, as you get older, retirement plan's really a big deal. And if we can get kids, whether they think they need it or not, even if it's $25 a month, if we can at least get them started, I know that down the road, they're going to be really glad. So it's just trying to, even though most of them don't get in it, we try really hard still to have them think about it, because it really is a big deal. And it's not so much even if they're going on to another job, it's just they have a plan for their future. And a lot of times the kids that are working in fast food, they don't have that. Especially in their early 20s. I think everybody is just tapped out on what they can afford to do just living, let alone even thinking about putting money away for retirement. But at least if you have an avenue there and you can keep promoting and say, you know, just put $25 a month, you'll be so glad. You know, it's still a good thing, but you're right. Most kids just can't fathom that they're going to need that. That just seems so far away.
Yeah, you're talking to two former newspaper rejects, so we don't know what retirement savings.
When I was in the newspaper, I know thinking about 401k was like the furthest thing from my mind. Yeah. I couldn't afford to have that thing take out my paycheck. I couldn't.
Nowhere I worked even offered one until I got here. Oh. No newspaper I was ever at had a 401k.
I'm not even sure if mine did or not. I never inquired about it. But
probably didn't.
Yeah. that's the unfortunate thing, because
but no, I do. So we're all adults.
Yeah. See, and probably, you know, looking back now, $25 a month, you know, it's not a lot, but at least it was something to get going. And it's not so much the amount of the money. It's the discipline of putting yourself and thinking about not just today, what's your future look like, you know, regardless of what it is. But anyways, so much on the 401k we're definitely.
Yeah. The podcast ranting on random things.
Yeah. It took me till my son was 30 to get him to start getting in one. And I just pushed and pushed, but I understand it. I get it, but it's still nice to have.
So obviously, you know, on the topic of, you know, being able to retain and attract workers, a big part of that is developing a solid, you know, company culture. I think that in these times when they're so kind of crazy and volatile, people kind of gravitate to the brands they can trust. And that's not only for employees, that's also for operators and the franchisees looking at the brand itself. So I was hoping you kind of describe to us, you know, what you feel like, you know, Pizza Factory's company culture is at this point, and you know, how franchisees and employees kind of play into that, and how you guys kind of respond to them and relate to them.
Well, the culture, hopefully, in every store, as we're getting employees back, what they're finding that it's a safe place, number one. We have the Anti-Bully Friends or Kindness program, which is basically started years ago because of the employees that we hire, making sure that there's inclusion and that they're being treated nicely, which is difficult when you start a new job or you go anywhere new. You move, whatever it is, it's always difficult to work into a group that's already been there and they all are kind of a, you know, they're a group. So that is one thing, is making sure that they're feeling like they are in, they're being welcomed like they should be and treated correctly. The other is, you know, besides the anti-bully program is really, we're trying really hard to give them tools to see why, what is their impact on a business. When I worked, when I was in high school and early 20s, I just went in and did my job and this is what I was supposed to do. I didn't know the whys. I didn't know how business worked. I didn't know what my part played in the success or the failure of that business. So I think trying to show team members when they come on and give them more of the whys and have a part of what's going on and understanding it more, I think that makes them feel really a lot more engaged and have a lot more pride or concern or just interest in what they're doing and how it's affecting the business, as well as getting some education that, you know, the biggest thing I think most of us know is that whether it's employees and sometimes many of our guests, I think everything that goes into your drawer goes into your pocket. And I think it's, there's an education there for kids to see that, you know what you do does reflect on this business, on your coworkers, whether or not they'll have a job, and really help them to see that they are part of something. They're a part of whether this business is successful or even more successful than it already is, that they play a really big part in that. And I think a lot of kids want to feel value that way. So I think that's a big part, is showing them that. And then just, you know, the generation that's coming up is really into, they're not into going to the next career and finding out what that is. I think there's more kids today that are trying to figure out what they want to do. And college isn't always it. It's expensive. And trying to find out and showing kids that there are avenues that they can take, whether it's in our brand or another one, that if college is not your thing, then look somewhere else. You don't have to feel like you're defeated or therefore you're less because you didn't go to college, you didn't get a college education. You can be successful. Many of our owners, myself included, did not go to college. It doesn't take away from who you are and what you can do, that degree. It adds to it, of course, for some positions, but showing the kids that there's a path otherwise, I think that also helps, is for them to see that, you know, maybe I could do this. And I can work here, or, you know, give them ideas that they can do. They can start their own business, whatever it is. That's the other thing I hope is happening. And we try really hard to show that there are, because so many of our managers are now owners. And that is just really rewarding to see them come up in the ranks, start in high school. And then, you know, sooner, all of a sudden they're owners, and it's really great.
Yeah. Going off of that and taking it from the franchisee perspective, I want to touch on growth and development. And this is a question I ask a lot of, you know, franchisors nowadays. And it's, you know, the macroeconomic background, you know, there's talks of, you know, recession and slowdowns. You know, obviously, you know, job growth numbers announced today, it doesn't really feel that way, but that has been said a lot in the news. And I was just curious, you know, in terms of what you've been hearing from franchisees and operators about their confidence about being able to continue on with their plans and their franchise agreements this year, where they think they'll be able to continue on, where they think they might have to pull back a little bit. What are some of the conversations you've been having with them about what 2023 might look like?
Well, we're getting ready in March. We're actually going to be having our regional meeting. So that's going to be a big topic that we're going to be talking to everyone about. One is food costs, labor. How are we as a company addressing those? Because our job is to find solutions a lot of times to what's happening in the stores. We're taking we just hired a brand new franchise business coach who used to be a pizza factory owner. So he's going to be a great value because he's been in their shoes as well. So we're taking really the attitude of our franchise business coach really, really strongly now, even more than before. And working with franchisees, I just did a road trip with one of them and sat down with the owners and said, okay, where is it here that we can help you with? What is it that you need? And 9 times out of 10, quite honestly, it's sitting down and being able to get them to just sit for a few minutes and talk, not try to do the text or the email or the phone call. They're busy, they're running around, but sit down with them and say, okay, let's look at your P&L. Let's look at what you're doing and how can we carve off some of your labor? How can we increase your profitability? What is it that we see? So that's one thing that we're doing is besides behind the scenes, working with our loyalty app that we know just drives sales tremendously, trying to find more ways to decrease labor, whether it's in automation or whatever it is, and just really trying to figure out a solution for, because everybody's is different. It's not like all stores have the same issue. And trying to figure out how do we help them, whether it's getting in face-to-face and saying, okay, let's look at your P&L. Let's look at what the numbers are saying, not what you think, but what the numbers are saying. And then, like, again, on the back end, our staff are always looking at new food products, marketing tools, whatever it might be, and making sure that the stats that we're collecting are also telling us a story. Because you cannot go just by, you know, this store is doing this amount a month and this store is doing this or whatever. There's a story there, and it's always in the stats. It's always in the analytics. It's in the numbers. And, you know, so that for us is probably the way that we're attacking it the most, is really, really trying to take that. Even like I said, if it's an hour that I go and sit with somebody with an FBC, and the FBC is there a lot more than I am, obviously, but just sitting there going, okay, let's figure this out. It's your business, but let's figure it out. Let us help you figure out maybe how we can solve some of your issues.
Yeah, I think having an FBC is such a great idea. It's like a lot of times in the restaurant industry, solutions to a lot of what's going on are simpler than people make them. You know, yeah. I feel like we overcomplicate things a lot of times. And a lot of times with franchisees, really all they want to do is learn how to be more successful. You know, they don't always need the, you know, robot in the back of the kitchen. They might just want someone to talk to tell them what to do or how to get through whatever they're dealing with. And I think, you know, your background probably is why you were able to see that, you know. And do you think, I mean, just talk about how being an operator still right now is maybe helping you navigate, you know, some of these things that Ben was talking about. Because I've talked to a lot of people where, you know, franchisee sentiment for growth this year is a little bit murky. You know, I think they're optimistic about performance, but they think maybe next year might be more about actually expanding once they can figure out some of these profit margin issues. But yeah, I mean, how's your background right now just really helping you, you know, help these operators, you know, and how do you really enjoy that part of your career at this point, you know, really coaching and assisting people to become more successful?
You know, first I have my own store, so there's that aspect of it, because coaching my own managers, and, you know, I had the same situation with one of my stores. All of a sudden the food costs got out of whack. And so I do, even today, it's not like my stores run perfect. I'm still an owner. I'm still a human being. And my store was having some issues out of nowhere. And it was sitting down and trying to figure out and looking at all the different aspects of it. And it's the same thing that you would apply to anybody else's store. And there's a lot of takeaways from being a franchisee, you know, for over 30 years now, the things that I've seen, the things that have happened, and being able to maybe identify or at least think that this could be a possibility that's happening to another franchisee. May not be, but at least I have that experience. So that's been, that's probably been the biggest thing. I really do enjoy, quite honestly, trying to solve situations. I'm a problem solver. My big thing, I think I've told you before, there are no problems, there's only solutions. And I really believe that. I just don't know what that solution is always what we want it to be or what we think it is, but there is a solution. And so trying to find for these franchisees, and I agree with you 100%, the franchisee is running a business. I know what it's like in that day-to-day running the business. You don't have time to sit down and do all the other things that you're supposed to do. So we try really hard to make things easier for the franchisees. But the bottom line is you've got three hats and you've got to figure out how to divide your time between a marketer, a bookkeeper, and an operator. There's just no getting around it. It's much more complicated than it used to be 30 years ago when there wasn't all this technology and social media. So it's really trying to take the experiences that I've had and the things that I'm having happen in my store today, you know, and say, hey, this has happened to me right now. This is what I did. And the franchise business coach, they're awesome. And you're right. Their job is to strictly put the goals of the franchisee and say, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? It's not, what do we want for you? What do you want? Do you want to grow? Do you want to expand? Do you want to retire? Are you looking just to, you know, keep this for 5 years and sell it? What is your goal? And so to make sure that we're always aligned with what the franchisee wants as well, because it is their business at the end of the day.
So another topic that I think would be, you know, relevant to you, you know, being in California, one of the biggest news coming out of there is that the FAST Act, new law that they passed with the trying to get the council to overlook the wages and everything. I know it's on the back burner.
Fun topic here.
On the back burner now because of they were able to get it to a vote. But could you just, you know, your thoughts on that and you know, what you've been hearing from everyone over in California and how they're feeling with that and how they're kind of dealing with and how that's kind of, that process has been for you guys.
You know, I think I read where it's going to Virginia now, the same thing. And I think most people really don't understand the impact of it.
No,
I think they hear about it. And I think unless you're in a certain area of the business, you really don't, even with our franchisees, trying to get them to really pay attention to this, because it is a big deal. I personally think trying to get rid of the franchise model is on the agenda for a lot of people out there. And I think that's unfortunate with as many people that are, you know, have small businesses and not only the FAST Act for franchises, but what it's going to do to other independents, because it's just basically going to squeeze them out. If we are told as franchisees that we have to, say, for example, pay all our employees $20 an hour, and anybody under 50 restaurants, because I think that's where they left it at, was anybody that had 50 or more restaurants as supplies to. But if you're an independent and everybody else is now paying $20 an hour because they're mandated to, who's going to work for you? Who's going to work for the independent guy when they know they can go to a franchise? So you're squeezing
the same thing.
Yeah, it's like
the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's a bigger thing than what people realize. And it's not just about franchising. It's about independent people that are trying to open a business and do what they do. And which is a huge part of this country are these small businesses, whether you're a franchise or not, is irrelevant. It's small businesses that it's going to affect the most. And it's unfortunate because I really do believe that there's not a great portion of people in the California or wherever that really understand what the impact's going to be. And so I'm optimistic that this may go away. I don't know if it will. I know it's on hold for a while. So we'll see. But you can only hope. But, you know, right now, as far as we're concerned, we're moving forward and trying to prepare for whatever happens. Wages are going up regardless of this, especially in California. I mean, Washington is one of the higher hourly wage states now. So it's going to happen anyways that wages are going to go up, that part of it. So we are addressing that for our franchisees. But, you know, there's just not new that wages go up. It's not new that we have all these things that happen, a recession or this or that. You just get through it. You figure out how to get through it and you do. And this is going to be another one, whether it's COVID. Everybody's got to figure out how to get through it. And no, it's not fun. And yes, it can be painful at times, but we are going into this year very positive. Our sales growth is up. Granted, average tickets are up because of the prices of on our menus have gone up. I get that. But, you know, watching and seeing the market share and making sure that you are still being true to yourself and that you don't start trying to play games and do things that you're trying to get people in for the wrong reasons. I guess I wish I could explain that better, but I think the thing I want most is to be true to who we are as a brand. We're not going to start cheapening our product. We're not going to change our culture. We're not going to change a lot of things. We're just going to figure out how do we get through this next journey that we're all going to be on. Doesn't matter what form of restaurant you're in. We all are going to be going through this.
Yeah, I'm not an overly political person. I'll be on a soapbox, but sometimes I do think we're trying to solve problems before they exist.
Yep.
You know, in terms of this, I don't know that a lot of businesses were asking for this. You know, granted, you know, the way it was positioned is, you know, there was sort of a select few in the way that hourly workers were, you know, supposedly being treated, but the market was dictating a change in that without interference, right? As you're talking about the wages, I don't know any quick service restaurant that's not paying above $15 an hour at this point, you know, so if you're just letting the market dictate it, we were headed there anyway, without creating a council of people to implement things that were going to trickle down to the mom and pops, like you mentioned. So we will jump off this soapbox. We could probably talk about this for 45 straight minutes. But you know, one thing I do want to talk about, though, I think, you know, in the Pizza Factory model that is very unique, you know, we kind of got onto it last time. We talked about sort of an express version of the restaurant, you know, multi-unit ownership. I think one of the answers, and you see this in a lot of brands now, to all the challenges at hand are, is that diversified suite of options. You know, real estate for fast casual historically was pretty limited. We're talking inline builds. You know, now you've got drive-throughs with observation windows and pickup units and so on and so forth. So, I mean, talk about that aspect of the business and, you know, really how it's helping, you know, operators in the system, prospective ones, you know, really sort of drawing them in to be able to have a model to flex to whatever it is they happen to be looking for.
Yeah, the express model, we've got quite a few because we rolled it out a little over a year ago. And so now, like I said, we just opened up another one and I think we've got three or four that are in the works. But the express model, you're right, it addresses the issue of trying to find other ways to be more profitable because you do not have the high rent and all those other things that go with it. On the other hand, when you're a brand and that your culture is family and meet groups and community, there's a difference there that you can't always give up that. And that's the part I was talking about. We don't want to give up who we are, if there's a lot of pizza brands that are like us. We're not necessarily the Domino's. We are the brands and the type of pizza restaurant that comes into the community and creates relationships with schools and Boy Scouts and all those other things. And they come and they have their parties. So the express model is still something that's available for people. And yes, people are doing it and wanting it. And that's great. But a lot of them are also choosing to have some sort of seating. And we're still growing with our fast casual model. The only difference is that our square footage is being reduced. You know, before you would maybe open up a 4,000, 5,000 square foot store. That's not happening. You know, now we're looking, going, nah, you need to stay around 25 to 3,000 square feet to really stay in the game and not be too much. So it's kind of a double-edged thing. The express model is definitely an addition for us that's good and available and successful, but we are not navigating away from having our traditional sit down as well.
So in terms of growth and how you guys are thinking about where you guys want to plant your flags, you know, talk about, you know, the markets that you guys are targeting for this year and the years beyond, and Is it more of like you guys are kind of doing like a regional thing where you're doing that concentric circles out of a certain region, or is it more of like you're following operators into certain markets? How are you guys kind of viewing the growth strategy?
For us, it's if someone were to come to us and say want to open in another state, one, first of all, we have to look at distribution. Are we going to be able to accommodate these guests? Are these new franchisees, are we going to be able to accommodate them without this huge increase in price because of X, Y, or Z? So that's the first thing. But primarily, we're still growing, for the most part, in California, Washington, everything on the West Coast as far as a region. That seems to still be where everybody's looking. Texas, we have a couple more stores that hopefully are going to open this year, so that'll put us at three there. And then we do have the one state, one store in Georgia. So we're looking at growing, but this pre-COVID and after COVID thing is a little bit changed for us, but mostly we're looking at where are the people wanting to put a pizza factory. And we have, you know, had people come that want to go into another state, and we've actually had to decline. I mean, we're very grateful that this is the brand that they're choosing. They want to start it in their state, but unless they're able to really grow it with multiple units to give it a real good impact right off the bat, we're kind of passing on that. And staying where we're at right now. So it's a little different than it was before, mostly because there was, everybody was looking to buy a business at one point during COVID because they didn't have a job. And now that's kind of changing a little bit. So for us primarily, we're not aggressive in the fact that we're just saying, yeah, we're going to go to 10 states. That's our goal. That's not it at all. We want to focus on the states that we are in and grow them. And like I said, if somebody wanted to go in a different state, especially if it butts up to another state that we're in, that's fine, but it's got to make sense distribution wise. And it has to make sense, for future growth to make sure that we can make an impact in that state, not just one-offs.
Yeah. One thing that we like to do here sometimes is I like to ask Ben, you know, whether or not he would eat something. So I saw that you all had a Flaming Hot Cheeto pizza, which I'm going to guess Ben would probably eat if presented with the opportunity. But 100%. What was the reaction? You know, I got to be honest. I've never had Flaming Hot Cheetos. I know that's like a cult. I think Ben had the Wings version of them when Applebee's had kind of done that for a bit. But yeah.
Well,
what was the reaction to that? I mean, how did that one go over?
People either loved it or they hated it. You know, and it was like, it really wasn't like it's an okay thing. They either really liked it or they really didn't like it. I'm with you. I'm not a hot and spicy kind of person, and Flamin' Hot Cheetos is not something I pick up at the grocery store, but boy, we had a good overall, it really drove sales and people were buying it. Those that liked that kind of thing, it was crazy. And, it was really a fun one to roll out too. So it was a good time doing it. It, you know, the social media part of it, people were really jumping in. So it was fun too. It's, you know, sometimes it's just getting people excited about stuff. It's not necessarily, it's going to be something that, you know, knocks that out of the park and you put it on your menu, but it was just a really fun pizza to roll out. So it was good.
People love Flamin' Hot Cheetos. It's like one of the most common quick service LTOs, or at least it used to be. I think I remember KFC doing it, I think, too, many years ago.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a Pepsi. It's a Pepsi owned.
You know what? Yeah.
So you know everybody that carries Pepsi was doing Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have a question for you too, Ben. Do you notice a difference between Pepsi and Coke? Have you ever tried that? Is that something?
I mean, if you were to blindfold me, I think I'd be able to tell you the difference between the two. But I don't have a preference over either one. I like both of them, but I can tell the difference between the taste of them.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think I could tell the difference, but I don't think one. I don't like one over the other. This has nothing to do with anything, but always worth bringing up these random debates. So one thing I did see, MJ, you know, is you know, that you moved up 50 spots in this franchise business review ranking, which we've worked with them before on things. They're always really good and knowledgeable on that part of the industry, of course, as you would expect from someone whose name was Franchise Business Review. But, you know, I think that's a cool concept, you know, because you're talking about franchisee satisfaction, right? So, I mean, what did that mean to get that, you know, ranking in there?
You know, we were really excited about it because, you know, there's competition in anything and you always want to see somewhere where you're seeing you move up the line. So moving up 50 points was a pretty big deal. And, you know, our average unit volume has just jumped so much and we have so many more stores that are hitting the, you know, in the $1 million range. So it was nice because it also, you know, we share the stuff with the franchisees because they're the ones that are helping these numbers. It's not just us. It's what these stores are doing. So it's nice. They get excited about it as well. When we had our convention a couple months ago, when we show the awards and stuff, they really get into it. They're very proud and, you know, they're a part of it. They're, like I said, they're the reason what we're doing these things. So it was really exciting for us. And it's just nice to see so many of our stores doing so well and, you know, adding on, we're getting more multi-unit operators from within the brand instead of just people coming from outside. So that's always rewarding as well. So we're very honored that, and very happy when that came out.
So we're in the second month of the year now. You know, January's come and passed by. We're kind of in that stage where things start to really zoom, or at least I think so. And so kind of give us a taste of, you know, what's on deck for you guys, you know, for 2023. What are some of the highlights that you guys are expecting? You know, what are some of the goals that you guys have set out for yourself to be able to accomplish this year?
I think the first thing I would say is when we have our every year, what are our goals within a company, what we're supposed to do? The first and foremost is how do we make this year, where last year it was about labor a little bit more, but this year was the first thing on the top of the list is how do we make franchisees more profitable? They're seeing their labor going up. They're seeing their food costs go up. You can't keep seeing sales go up if their profit isn't going up as well. And that can happen real quickly with as much as is happening right now when they're getting hit with, especially in January with produce, and it was crazy. So the biggest thing for us is how do we look at profitability and how can we help them move that needle? We can't do it on our own. We can do a lot of things to help them, but they have to play a part in it. So it's looking at not just raising prices on your menu. It's looking at the whole picture. Sometimes we get so comfortable in our stores and we're going along and then we don't see, you know, a point or two, you start dropping here in a percent in some area, whether it's, you know, your discounts are going up too much, your food costs, whatever, you know, you don't realize what those 1 or 2 points here and 2% here. And all of a sudden it adds up and you go, holy cow, that's a lot to my bottom line. So I think our biggest thing is trying to really narrow in and take our franchise business coaches and really drill on that and really try to get them to tighten up as much as they can and assist them with ways to do it. In addition, our job, in my opinion, is to keep driving sales to them and finding programs and whatever it is out there that we can help them to either operate more efficiently or give them more time because there's more automation. For example, answering reviews and things that go out. If you have one place, instead of going to Facebook, to Instagram, to Google, you have to go to each spot to answer a review, let's say, where you have a program that you just go in one thing and you can hit them all in there. So there's not all these sign-ins. Something as little as that is a big deal because you know, you don't have time. Like I said, as an operator, these guys are working their stores. They're not just sitting back and you know, looking at their computer all day. So it's finding those programs and trying to see how we can be more efficient in our office, but also make it more efficient for the franchisees so that their time is being used at the best they can, which is really educating and showing them how to use their POS more to read the reports that are in there. When a POS system is as comprehensive as ours is, when it's Speedline, there are so many reports in there that can help you navigate through all these things that are going on and show you where you're exceeding and where you're not. So really trying to give them that, where it's very intimidating for most to get into these computers, is, you know, it's a lot to learn how and see it. So we do a lot of webinars. We're doing a lot of one-on-ones and saying, okay, here's a report. You know, like for instance, we did in our last newsletter, here's three key reports that you need to look at every month. This is what you should look at. So we're trying to help them that way. So that's, I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, keep driving sales, of course, but it's really drilling down with the FBCs and the franchisees and going, okay, let's work together to use the programs, to use the tools that you have to learn more about what is actually happening in your store and how can you really, really tighten up.
And I've heard, MJ, that you're also now requiring operators to sign up for subscriptions of QSR when they come into the system.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard that too.
I'm kidding.
Yes.
Although, you know,
it's
hey,
part
it
of our checkoff
hey,
list.
It is free, though. You know.
That door does not open in a new store until, doggone it, they can prove that to us. We do not allow them to open their door.
Hey, you know, a little self-promotion never hurt anybody.
No, you know.
Well, MJ, you know, thank you so much for joining us. But before I let you go, but yeah, go ahead. If you were going to give us some self-promotion, I'll take it. I'm not. But yeah, go ahead with whatever you were saying a second ago.
I was just going to say, you'd be surprised at how many of the franchisees do read that stuff. But that's all I was going to say.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I'm glad you said it. but I was going to say, you know, before I let you go, I just want to open the floor to you. You know, if there's something you want to make sure just to tell everybody, I know from last time you're on here, and of course, this is always true whenever I ask anyone, if you want to learn more, definitely head to the Pizza Factory website. Lots of franchising information on there, of course. You know, if you want to learn about how to get involved and become an operator. But, you know, MJ, the floor is yours if you want to just kind of, you know, close out of what you want to say and what, you know, anything you might want people to know.
Yeah, you know, mostly I want to just say that for us, we're looking at this year is going to be a positive year. We're all feeling really optimistic, even though there's a lot of buzz out there otherwise. Pizza does well just about through anything that goes on. And we're just looking at it and going into it with a real positive optimistic attitude. And I hope everybody is looking at this year. It's been a tough year. I don't care if you're in pizza or not. It's just been a lot of last couple of years have been really tough. And I just hope everybody else is doing the same. And regardless if it's pizza or just in your life in general, that, you know, we've got to make a change and go into everything with a positive and not find all the negatives. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is, you know, it's going to be what we make it, and we've got to start out with the right attitude. So for us, if you have that right attitude and you think that, you know, what we have is might be something you're interested in, yeah, please do reach out to us at franchises@pizzafactory.com or call the office. But yeah, I just, you know, like I said, I think this year is going to be, we've got to change and be optimistic.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to a pizza operator recently, and, you know, they mentioned that they never met a family who cut pizza out of the budget.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
It's just not something that happens in tough times. If anything, you add pizza to the budget. So it's a category that does really well amid hard conditions.
It does. You could still feed a family probably for $30 easy. It's family of four. You know, I mean, and you can't say that very often. I mean, I travel a lot. I'm in the fast food lines looking at stuff and I go, whoa, you know, that was just for me, that cost of that item. So pizza still is and always has been, and it's going to be a good year. I feel it.
When I first met Ben, he used to eat entire pizzas by himself, so he might not fit your bill, but, I think normally you are very correct. He has since stopped that behavior, though.
Yes, that was not very healthy. That's old, younger Ben. No. That's not the new Ben anymore.
Yeah,
not
the QSR editor Ben. Aged in his time at QSR.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, MJ, so much. We really appreciate the insight, as always. It's been great. We'll continue to follow the brand. Exciting things ahead. I will also adhere to your optimistic tone for the year. I think it's something we could all use a little bit of a dose of, so we appreciate your time, and for everybody out there listening, as always, thank you. We'll see you next time.